Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Lieutenant General Stephen Botell, Chief Information Officer in G6, Department of the Army. Joining us in our conversation is Chuck Pro.
General Botell, can you tell us about some of the IT lessons learned from Iraq and Afghanistan and how those lessons are affecting Army technology?
I'd be glad to, Chuck. And as you can imagine, Afghanistan and Iraq have many lessons that we've learned. Probably the one lesson I've learned, I just returned from the theater, is where there's a vacuum today or something doesn't exist today with the pervasiveness of the tools that we all use, somebody's going to fill it. And what I mean, if I don't take and provide a particular IT tool, a radio, a computer, a wireless network to a certain organization within, say, Afghanistan in a very short period of time to meet their needs, the availability of those things off the commercial network, they will buy their own. They will install it themselves. These young men and women are just like the kids here. They know they can buy a router and a switch. They know they can buy a wireless network and a bunch of cards and build their own network. If you don't provide them the right tools quickly and a vacuum appears, they will fill that vacuum out of their discretionary funds.
Interesting. Has the evolution of technology affected the evolution of warfighting?
I would say absolutely. Two things. One is when you make IT pervasive as it is today and information pervasive as it is today, you tend to flatten your hierarchy of management, much as is happening in the commercial world. Let's face it, today in the commercial world as well as in the Army, if a young soldier or sailor or airman decides to launch an email message to his boss or to his wife back in the United States, it goes at the speed of light minus switching time. And that information flows so quick and the ramifications of it flow very quickly. No longer do you have the point where you have someone at the bottom part of the architecture or the hierarchy who has to manually put something on a piece of paper and send it through maybe his boss and his boss's boss and his boss's boss and over a period of time get a decision. It's near instantaneous. So you flatten the management hierarchy. What that's caused us to do in the Army is relook how many levels we have. The Army basically has four major levels of hierarchy. We have brigades, divisions, corps, and Army. We're in the process of removing one of those levels. And it will probably be in that process when you remove a level as you start parsing out and sharing those management responsibilities. So when we finish this process, we will have three levels. We know that. We know we're going to have brigades. We've already announced that. Divisions, corps and armies. At the end of the day, only two of those will continue, and you'll parse those functions. And you can do that because of the information technologies.
How long will it take to resolve which two of the three?
I think that'll probably resolve within 12 to 18 months. We've already decided that the lowest level, the brigade, will still survive. But what we've done is we've enhanced that brigade with IT technologies to allow it to be able to operate within other services. In other words, take an Army brigade and nest it in a Marine division. Okay, we can do that as we're building IT services in. So the brigades, we've pretty much, the brigade is our basic fighting unit today as we evolve, as we're building today. Where in the past it had been a division, but we're going to make those brigades very autonomous and independent. And we are able to do that with a lot of command and control communications, satellite systems, IP-based networks.
We've heard you speak about the importance of reading and understand the Chief of Staff and the Secretary of the Army's paper, Serving a Nation in War, a Campaign Quality Army with Joint and Expeditionary Capabilities. Could you summarize the key messages one should take away from this paper?
Key message in that is we need to make a dramatic change in the structure of our Army. Army is primarily and has been designed for many years to fight on the East German plain, North German plain against the Soviet PAC, or in the Korean Peninsula. And it's a very structured Army. We knew the battle space. We knew the ground. We knew the cities and the mountains. We knew exactly where we were going, and we knew what we thought we were going to do when we got there. In today's contemporary environment, with the war on terrorism and the radical fundamentalist groups that we're going to face, they are non-nation state. They don't belong to a nation. They don't wear a uniform. They move back and forth between countries, and they move globally. To be able to address that threat, to be able to address that appropriately, you need to have small, mobile organizations that can quickly move around the world and perform whatever mission we assign to them. So the Chief's paper and the Secretary's paper says, look, the brigade will become our combat fighting unit. We're going to call them brigade combat teams. There will be many of them. We're going to increase the number of them. We're going to enable them by satellite-based networks, because so many of the places that we have found the Al-Qaeda and other organizations are in nation states that have failed, or third world nations where there is no infrastructure. So to enable those organizations takes lots of satellite capability, lots of IT capability, a heavy reliance on intelligence, and providing that to those organizations. So I think a chief and secretary's paper is you got to dramatically change this army, and you need to do it now.
What does it mean to the individual soldier?
There's a couple pieces in there. One piece of the chief's paper says, look, we're going to be a campaign quality army, and we're going to be joint. The chief would like us to have home station operation centers and project force out of the United States. And in doing that, he will stabilize the force. Right now and in the past, we move people about every 3 years, sometime more often. Do we need to do that if we're going to be a force projection army? A young man and woman can come in the army and really spend 3, 4, 5, 6, even up to 7 years at the same place, have his family buy a home there, settle into that community, and use that environment. And if he gets promoted, move him around that post camper station. There's no good reason in today's environment to move him automatically every 3 years just because the clock ticks off 3 years. The chief says, I want your families in the same place. Let's have them in a home station. Let's have a good quality of life there and spend some resources on making that a very powerful quality of life and project force out of that place when we need to.
The paper talks about a lot of a big change. I'm curious, it doesn't really talk about how long it will take to achieve this point.
Great question. The 3rd Infantry Division, which returned from Iraq this spring, which is the division that actually went into Baghdad, will be radically changed by the end of this year. It will not have 3 maneuver brigades. It will have 4 maneuver brigades. It will have the new IT system, the new satellite system, the new voice over IP systems, all the new networking, all the new red switch and zipper and nipper and all those types of things. We have started delivering that last week. Soldiers are already training on it. We will completely outfit that division, turn it around, and have it ready to deploy again after the first of the year. We will do 3 more divisions in calendar year 05, the 101st Airborne Division, the 10th Infantry Division, and the 4th Infantry Division, all before the end of calendar year 05.
General, we often hear the concept of network-centric operations. Now, what is NCO and how does it apply to the Army?
Network-centric operations, which we are trying to achieve, I think is the end state, and I'm not sure quite what the end state is. But we have tremendous amounts of information that we generate and that we store. The question is, how do you get that information readily to all the decision makers, be that decision maker at the lowest level or somewhere back in a depot and sustaining base in the continental United States? You know, most of us are primarily circuit-based and have been circuit-based for many years. That is, a data stream flows from point A to point B. Network-centric operations presumes that you can make that data centrally stored, you may cache it elsewhere, and it's available to everyone. And as we do that, we start to get the synergism that has been promised to us for so long. The tools that will make that happen are really the web services, combination of XML and SOAP and UDDI, lots of the web services protocols that will start to allow us to leverage these terabytes, in some case petabytes, of information we have stored.
On that topic, can you also describe LAN WARNET and how it will impact the business of warfighting within the Army?
Yeah, Chuck, LAN WARNET is a attempt we've made with the TRADOC commander, General Kevin Burns, and Headquarters Department of the Army to try and bound and define what these networks are. I mean, most of us grew up that have been around a few years where we had a separate network at the low end, and it really wasn't a network. It was a voice capability at the lowest level. It was a tactical voice capability on tactical radios. And as you moved up in our infrastructure, you got into what we call mobile subscriber equipment. Yes, you had a network primarily circuit-based. It was locked on mountaintops. It was not mobile. And then when you got back in the United States, you got into other circuit-based networks that tie together depots, the corporate world, the Army corporate world, and the other services. And you've merged these now together with TCIP becoming the de facto standard. And now you've merged the lowest level to the highest level to the sustaining base, the continental United States, with a TCIP backbone. It's a router-based network, and we've all joined that network. But as we've merged these into a single network, we had to name them. And so what we're saying is LAN WARNET for the Army is the network that goes from the lowest soldier all the way back to our sustaining bases and depots, be they in Europe, in the Pacific, or back in the United States. It's the network plus the applications that ride on that network.
As you've talked about this discussion of technology, I hear a story of change, and you talked about how change flattens the Army. And I'm curious, what's happening to what in the civilian world would call middle-level managers, people who were trained for sort of a certainty in the world, and now it's all changing. How's their life changing?
I think dramatically, and to some people, it probably is a terrible awakening, because that information does flow so quickly. But it's a double-edged sword. On one side, it flows very quickly. On the other side, if we're not careful, we leave out the middle management level where they are there to make decisions and make recommendations. And in some cases, it'll flow directly from the bottom of the organization to the top of the organization without much massaging, staffing, and thought process in it. And so on the good side is the information flows very quickly. On the other side is in some cases, you tend to lose the influence and the richness that is added by the staff. So as you trim down that staff and eliminate some of that staff, we are trying to be very careful to keep a very strong group of people in there that still add the richness to that raw information and raw data as it comes forward for decision making.
It's an interesting point, especially about the staffing. What is knowledge management and how is the Army using it? We'll ask General Stephen Botell, CIO of the Army, to take us through this when the Business of Government Hour continues.